Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 18 of Season 8 of Movie Round Minute, the daily podcast, where we FUBAR our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg classic Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again is, from Movie Mustache, is Simon Appleton. Welcome back, Simon.
Thank you.
Yeah. You've rejoined us at a very interesting part. You know, the minute 18 begins with a body falling to the ground, who you helped us identify yesterday, the actor who plays, even though we don't know the name of the character, and ends with the chief medic giving a report. So we talked yesterday about I guess he's credited as a Bangalore assistant or something like that. Him meeting his demise, he gets a ricochet off of his helmet and then ends up, taking off his helmet and getting shot in the exact same spot once again. You know, the way that they do this, the action is continuing as this is happening. I mean, the screen is focused on it, but we see that everyone else is still, you know, continuing with what they need to do. You know, you can see, Wade or some other medic in the background doing something, you know, as this guy just crumples to the ground and, with a big hole in his head, unfortunately. And, you know, they're just continuing with their work on the Bangalores, which I guess is also something very important. You know, the idea that even when you're in this type of situation, as horrible as it is, that the friends around you are slowly getting killed. You know, you still have to continue with your mission. You have to do what you can. And they do a great job depicting that. Because, I mean, yesterday, Caparzo says, you know, that how lucky this guy was that it just bounced off his helmet.
Yeah.
And
he's not wrong.
Correct. That's the irony of it all. He's not wrong at all, but, here's a presumably a friend of his that just got his brains shot out right next to them, and we don't hear the soldiers going, "Oh my God, I can't believe he was just shot." You know, they say that when he survives. When he doesn't survive, it's like, okay, we now have to move on.
There's like a split second realization, and then back to it.
That's right.
That's all there is. It's
we can, you know, we can, it makes we can,
sense. It's...
we can mourn later, I guess, the type of thing is let's deal with what we need to deal with right now, and we'll mourn our fallen comrades later. You know, I think that's also part of it,
yeah.
which obviously makes sense. You know, you have your job to do, and you got to go take care of it. So in order to do that, you sort of have to put, I guess, some of the emotions on the side in order to be able to get done what needs to get done.
To be able to mourn your friend, you've got to live. So, yeah, you got to get the job done.
That's true also. It's a very good point. Yeah. And, you know, they continue with putting together these Bangalores. And, you know, again, once you know what a Bangalore is and you see what they're doing, it makes so much sense.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, and you can even see that it's written on one of them, Bangalore. It says Bangalore, I think M1A1, if I read it properly, with the way they do it.
The Americans do love that coding with their weaponry, don't they? M1A1, this one,
yeah.
That one.
I'm actually curious to know what they actually stand for. You know, is M supposedly military?
Wouldn't be surprised.
Interesting. Like, I think of an M16. Like, what is it? Why is it an M16?
Yeah. That's a very good question.
Yeah.
Makes me wonder rightly, the civilian designation is AR-15, so it's totally different.
Well, AR is assault rifle, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm assuming so. But,
right.
I don't know if enough about weapons to know if there's enough to differentiate the two, or if it's just that this one was made for the military and this one was made for civilian life.
Yeah, no, I don't know enough about it either, about you know, about why they would have called it an M. I mean, because basically, I mean, the one thing I see about the M16 is it replaced the M1. Okay, and it replaced the M1918, which is the BAR, and the M3 grease gun. So it sounds like it's a military designation.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Interesting. I'll have to think about that one. Try and figure that out. And then we get a shot of Wade still working on one of the soldiers, and this guy is screaming also. You know, we hear him go, God, help me. And Wade actually tries to calm him down by saying, you're not going to die. You're not going to die. Mm. You're fine. Don't look at it. Don't look at it.
Yeah. It's that multitasking. It's quite impressive.
Right. So he's basically saying, if you don't look at it, you're okay. Now, which is a strange way to think about it. You know.
Yep.
But I guess it works.
out of mind?
Maybe. I guess he's also, I mean, again, there's so much going on here. There's so much chaos and everything. So I guess from that perspective, you know, the idea that Wade is still trying to calm him among all of this screaming of other people around them and the gunshots and the ricochets and all that stuff. Very interesting.
It could just be that if he's screaming and wriggling, he can't do his job, so he's trying to keep him under control so he can save him.
Okay.
Or it might just be him, the empathetic side of Wade, trying to help the soldier in more ways than one.
it could be.
excuse me.
Yeah, it's very possible that's part of it. But again, he's doing a nice job of it. I guess they're trying to also show us who Wade is. You know, that he's very professional and is able to work under pressure in these types of situations. You know, we don't know what experience he has. You know, in the field. You know, we know that he's part of their unit, but we'll find out later. I think about in 2 weeks from now. The number of places that they've been, but who has been there besides Mike that we don't know.
Yeah.
You know, they don't give us that information. You know, this isn't like Band of Brothers where they've told us where they've been. So we have somewhat of an idea, but here we have absolutely no idea where they've been. And then, you know, we see them, finishing to put, I guess the finishing touches in the Bangalore mine. And then Miller screams out, Bangalores, clear the shingle. Now, do you have any idea what that means?
Shingle is usually what we refer to on the stones. So I'm guessing it's just that sandy mound that they're on is what they, with all the barbed wire is. I'm assuming, I've always taken it as that's what they need to clear. That's how I've always read it.
Okay. So the information about what a shingle is a shingle starts just above the high tide mark. And basically the shingle on Omaha Beach consisted of a few yards of smooth stones that had been deposited by the tides. The shingle spanned from the high tide mark to the man-made seawall. So, you know, that's the area you know, where all the barbed wires and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Now, do you think that what they do here is real or not? Did this really happen? You know, someone taking Bangalores and trying to clear the shingle.
I reckon it did because there was a lot of they put a lot of beach obstacles out to try and put off an invasion. So yeah, I can buy into it.
Right. So the information that I have here, fact versus fiction, Although Captain Miller mentions clearing the shingle just before setting off the Bangalore torpedoes to clear the barbed wire on the seawall, nothing that actually resembles the shingle can be seen in the film. So, he says clear the shingle, but we don't get to see the shingle.
I've always taken it as it's the other side of the sand, or it's because obviously they're filming it in Ireland, not on the real beach. They're having to make do, much like Ridley Scott was going to have to make do with black Hueys for Black Hawk Down, had the U.S. military not been very helpful.
Right.
I just took it that way.
Okay. Understandable. And then the guy next to Miller screams, "Fire in the hole!" And then Miller screams, "Fire in the hole!" And then Mike screams, "Fire in the hole!" And then it's great because we also see Wade screams also, "Fire in the hole!" And then what he does is he just protects the injured guy that he's working on, which again is great.
Yeah. And it looks instinctual as well. It doesn't look like something an actor has been told to do. He does it without thinking. Literally, so that the chain of fire in the hole goes down so everyone hears it, and then cover the soldier up. It looked very natural to me.
Yeah. It's great. I really like the way that they did that here. So what does the phrase fire in the hole mean?
There's going to be an explosion. Get down, take cover.
Correct. Exactly. And simple. Yeah, it's very simple, but do you know where it originates?
I don't. Is it something to do with artillery pieces, with cannons? I genuinely have no idea.
No, it actually was originated by miners. Because, with all the explosives that they would use underground and stuff like that. So the idea, as you said, fire in the hole is a phrase used to warn the imminent detonation of an explosive device.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Exactly. And at this point, they give us a great long shot of the area as it explodes. Giving us an idea of, how much damage this one, I guess, long pipe is able to make there. And it's just great.
But what I liked as well is that improvisational shooting style comes back into it because Spielberg didn't storyboard any of it. So whereas like in any other movie, that would be perfectly captured, the whole thing from multiple angles. It's not perfectly framed. You don't see the whole thing, if you know what I mean. It's like you're one of the people on the beach seeing it. You won't take in the whole thing. You'll see a specific bit of it because it's so huge. And I really like that. It really helps to immerse you in it. And as I say, it's not caught from an upper angle. You're not looking at it down from a drone or a helicopter or something like that. It is literally shot from the beach. Yeah. And it's awe-inspiring.
Yeah, it really is. Now, did you notice that in the background you see a whole bunch of Germans running away after the explosion goes off?
Yeah, you sort of see them through the falling sand.
Yeah. Because, basically they've made room to move forward. Just by this, I'm pretty sure based on what I recollect that it wasn't that simple for them to, clear the shingle. I guess you can say. it wasn't. I don't think it was just one explosion, but I could be wrong.
I sort of took it as they were moving to another position to continue their defense, because obviously, like you say, the Yanks are pushing up the beach.
Correct. And then we get a shot of Mike, Hargrith, turning around and saying, "We're in business."
Yeah.
Definitely. Other side of the hole.
Every time I watch this film, I have to look up defilade because I always forget what it means. And they say it so many times.
Would you like to tell us what defilade means?
It's a position of cover, or in this case, it's telling them to get the other side of the like he says, other side of the hole. It's to get in cover from fire.
Right. It's basically find a place that you can stay safe from enemy fire.
Yeah.
That's more what it is. He's saying look, there's a place that you can get to that they can't reach you. So get over there as quickly as possible to the other side of the to the other side of that hole. And then the men all get up and start charging in that direction.
Yep.
Which again, the camera follows them so well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does.
You know, even as we see, you know, characters fall and possibly get shot. You know, you're not really sure if one of the guys who falls is shot or just trips. You know, as he's doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. It's not crystal clear. It's obscure.
Mm-hmm.
Fog of war type thing.
That's right.
And the moment also helps to give Mike the very sergeant-like qualities. He does sort of embody that whole sort of sergeant role very well, I think.
Yeah.
The grizzled veteran and also the guy who takes care of people sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And again, he's the guy that you want to be able to follow back. You know, to follow afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just great. And, you know, then we see the shot of, you know, the Germans still shooting at them, I guess. And, you know, the way that you know, we see all the ricochets and stuff like that as they're moving across. And as you said, the ambiguity of who's making it and who's not making it across this little area. And then, you know, the camera pans down and we see a whole bunch of medics that are working on some of the bodies.
Triage on the fly.
That's right. And we see that Wade is there also. And Wade first thing he does is give a guy a shot of morphine. You know, as he's doing it, and then we hear the other medic saying, "That's it, let's go." And then he you know, we see like a group of guys just lying one next to the other, and they're starting to, you know, they roll over them, looking at each of them, looking at their injuries, see what they do. And he says, the first one, he goes, "Inspected, morphine." You know, basically, it's funny that he's giving these instructions to Wade.
Yeah. Yeah, I found it interesting that Wade is of almost of like two worlds, because he's under Miller's command. He's in Charlie Company, but he's also answerable to sort of like the medical hierarchy as well. So it's almost like he's got a foot in two worlds and can be dragged in two different directions.
Right. And it's a question of which he, you know, which of them he needs to choose.
Yeah, he has to decide in the moment which one he follows. I can imagine it being quite confusing at times.
Correct. But again, I guess he looks at his priorities. Here, his priority is dealing with all of the, you know, dealing with the wounded.
Yeah.
You know, that's what he was doing before also.
Yeah, they had to drag him back.
Yeah. So do you know what the definition of triage is?
It's basically it's organizing the wounded you've got and deciding between who you work on. I couldn't tell you the exact definition, but it's prioritizing basing on who you can save and who can wait and who are too gone to be helped, basically.
Right. Okay. So triage is the process of prioritizing medical care when resources are not available to treat all patients equally. You know, deciding who we can save and who we can't. Medics and doctors on Omaha Beach had little in the way of supplies in order to treat wounded, and in many cases had to suffice with little more than sulfur powder, morphine, and bandages. And here they're showing us, you know, that even in the thick of battle, you have a medic or a doctor or whatever, you know, doing this, you know, deciding, okay, this is right now what we need to decide to do. You know, this guy, I mean, we'll get more into it a little bit tomorrow, but today he starts with, you know, that this guy I've inspected already, he just needs morphine. Let's give it to him and move along.
If you look beforehand, when Wade's working on the soldier on his arm and he's screaming, that guy's actually behind him looking over. He's almost instructing him in ways at times on what to do.
Interesting. Okay, makes sense. You know, again, we, as we mentioned earlier, we don't know what type of real experience Wade has.
No, this could be his first.
Well, I mean, throughout the movie, they call him Doc. So,
yeah,
you know, he's had some training, if not more training than you would think, you know, from that perspective.
Yeah.
So, okay, makes sense. And, you know, as they're going through these men on the triage, the minute ends. So did you have anything else you want to say about this minute, Simon?
Not of the episode itself, but it's just it's weird with this one, because obviously the last time I did this, The Great Escape, we had a little segments of scenes to work, so it was broken up and the minutes worked quite well. Whereas here, it's weird where we end, where we pick up and end, because it's basically one long scene.
So you're saying that John Sturges had the idea of movies by minutes in mind more so than Steven Spielberg when he's cutting a movie.
He knew that the great movie Rob was going to be doing a movie minute podcast about his one of his greatest works. So yeah, it's just interesting. Before we used to sort of we found it sort of stopped in quite convenient places, whereas this we're literally right in the middle of something and we stop. I find that quite amusing.
Yeah. I definitely agree with you on that. All right, so every Wednesday we have a segment called World War II Wednesday, where my guest will give their top five World War II themed movies. So, Simon, why don't you start off with your number five and work your way up?
Number five, we're going to start. We've been talking about a lot of deep stuff, so number five, we're going to start with something a bit lighter. Kelly's Heroes. Not one you hear a lot about these days.
Such a fun movie.
It is a fun movie, and it's a great cast as well. It's just this oddball humor of these guys. Like, yeah, we're kind of busy, but the war's wrapping up.
I think oddball. That's pretty funny that you mentioned oddball.
Yeah. So it's like, wow, this. And they get wind of this gold, and it's like, let's get some for us, and I can. Obviously, at first they're very much thinking of themselves, and then later on they get a bit more generous.
Right.
But I just love the idea of a bunch of soldiers going, pension plan, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Number four, Valkyrie. An interesting movie because obviously a bunch of not Germans for the most part, playing Germans without German accents. But it's interesting because it's showing you a different side of things. I mean, when you think of World War II, you think of the Nazis and the Nazi war machine. You don't so much think of the people who love their country but don't love Hitler.
Right.
And this is sort of telling their story, and it's a very interesting story, and it's one I watch, and every time I'm almost willing them to succeed. Obviously, things go wrong quite quickly. But, I like the fact that it raises the fact that not all Germans were Nazis. Yeah, you can be one without being the other, sort of thing. And it's the risks they took to try and achieve this, and how close they came, is a very interesting story, and the performances are brilliant. It's I would never have thought to see Bill Nighy playing a German military officer, but he does it brilliantly.
Right,
does it brilliantly. They all do. Kenneth Branagh as well. It's interesting to see a different side of the war. Number three, I've got a bit more classic, The Great Escape. We've discussed it before. Fantastic film. And I like the fact that you get a cross-section of the different allies. So you see the different mentalities between Americans, British, Polish, I believe, Canadians, Australians, you get those different personalities, and we're all allied together, but we do things different ways, that sort of thing. Not the most accurate film, but still just a great, great adventure film.
Yeah.
Filled with tension and excitement. And it is a classic for a reason. Number two, Saving Private Ryan. Like I've said, it is the benchmark by which modern war movies are made. It is a masterpiece. It truly is brilliant. And number one is A Bridge Too Far. I first saw this when I was a kid. Again, I love we're seeing the mix of allies working together on the different ways they do things. It's such a epic movie. And as a child watching it, I was so, obviously, despite the title, A Bridge Too Far, being the child that I was expecting, because we won the war, for it to be a big success. And you get to the end and it's kind of anticlimactic, but it's meant to be. And at the time, I was quite shocked by it, but I still love the film. And it is a brilliant film. I have actually been to Holland to see these areas. I've been to Arnhem. I've walked on the bridge because of this film. I read the book because of this film. And it is a spectacular film. And I think it does everyone justice in it. And my particular favorite moment, obviously, being British myself, is when the major communicates with the little German sent over the bridge, offering surrender. And he's like, "I'm terribly sorry. We don't have the facilities to take you all prisoner right now. Was there anything else?" It's just that British sense of humor of, yeah, we're in the shit, but we're going to have a laugh while we're doing it. And I love that moment. I went reading the book, finding out that bloke led a bayonet charge with an umbrella and a top hat. Legend.
Very, very British sounding.
Very, very British, but I love it.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it.
Wow. All right. That is a great list. Thank you very much for that. Simon, would you like to once again tell people where they can find Simon Appleton?
You can find my site, my blog, at moviemustache.com. Random news and reviews, anything from blockbusters to indie films. You can also find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Threads. Facebook, it's Movie Mustache 2.0. The rest of them, it's movie_mustache, or you'd probably be able to find me by searching The Movie Mustache. That's where you can find me.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movieroundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movieroundminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, earn this.
Earn this. My solitude.